everybody, and welcome to the first episode of The Therapy Show with Wendy Dunford and Scott Johnson. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Wendy Dunford. Hi, Wendy.
Hi.
We should make it clear that this is our first episode. If you've listened to Therapy Thursday on the morning stream here on the Frog Pants Network, then you've heard Wendy on that show, and she's been there every Thursday since we started it, and it's kind of the impetus for why we started this show. We won't explain this with every episode, but I think it's important for the first one to at least let people know where we're coming from and what's going on. Also, a few disclaimers. Wendy's my sister. That means that I may be biased either toward or against things she says. That's kind of the deal. And she's an actual therapist. We're not screwing around here. This isn't just us with funny ideas. This isn't hypothetical help. This is real help. And we're here primarily because of your support. So huge thanks to everybody who has supported the show and continues to. We hope you guys enjoy yourselves. Wendy, how you feeling? You still got shampoo in your eye?
I do. I was telling Scott earlier that stick with the cheap kind because it doesn't hurt when it gets in your eye.
Cheap shampoo in your eye, yeah. is not...
The fancy kind will blind you.
But Kim only has the fancy kind right now because she thinks this is the... You can tell me if this is there's any studies to support this or anything that you are aware of. But she claims she's found a shampoo that will both thicken and thicken current hair and stop leaving hair from leaving. Do you think it's true? Or does this sound like the malarkey we've all been fed for the last 20 years about, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I think you can have your individual things that just sort of work for you. And this is totally not today's topic, but
no.
One day I would love to talk about this, which is personal...
vanity.
Personal medical care.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
My genome says use this shampoo because my hair won't fall out.
Yeah.
I think there's something to it.
You think so?
Yeah, based on your own hair follicles issue.
I think my hair has been way better than anyone expected. I think I should have gone bald like my dad did by my late 20s, and I didn't.
Yeah.
And so the fact that I still have hair is fine with me, and I'm not going to mess with nature. So
yeah,
there you have it.
Use
all right,
Kim shampoo.
We are here for our first episode to talk about a relatively interesting topic if you're a parent. So if you're out there listening and you have children or are a child of a parent, and chances are all of you were at some point, I think you'll find some interest in this. And we've kind of, you know, had a back and forth about how these topics will work, how to break them down over this series of 12 episodes, and what to save potentially for a second series if that were to happen. And we settled on a few episodes dealing directly with parenting. And this first one is interesting because, let me explain this from my point of view. We live in 2014. It feels like the far-flung future. We should have hover cars and, you know, I should be in space by now.
Yeah, right.
It was supposed to happen. It didn't happen. Someone has robbed me of my chance to do the things I was promised in the 80s. But here we are. We're living in 2014. I'm a father of three. You're a father. You're a mother of four. So, you know, plenty of time with kids and stuff. And there's a sense that my oldest, who's 19, and people 19 through about 30, people that are being referred to in society as the millennial generation. I assume that means they came of age during the aughts. I suppose
yeah.
That's what that's for.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to Generation Z. Did they even exist?
No, I've never heard that name.
Well, I've heard X, Y, and then that was it.
It was anyone 1999, and that was it. You're Z.
Well, hold on. Let's see. If you lived in, grew up in the late 70s, early 80s, and mid 80s, that was all X,
yeah.
Right? Because you became 20-year-olds in the 90s, and that's when you all got your dumb hair and your grunge music and your whatnot. That supposedly made us Gen Xers.
Yeah.
I was up on the kind of high end of that. You were on the low end of that. And we were labeled as such.
Yeah.
Then you roll into Y, which I don't know what they are. They're all developers and computer programmers,
yeah,
silicon graphics people. Graphics
they're rich. People. We don't know them. They're rich.
Yeah, we don't know these people. Then Z, I think, just got skipped.
Yeah.
I don't hear about Z. And then millennials, which everyone talks about with disdain in their voice.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of this. So my observation is that there is a group of people like 19 to 30, 30 on the high end, 19 on the low end, who all kind of grew up with technology in their face. Texting was a norm. The internet was well established. You know, Taylor was born the year I saw my first webpage, 1994.
Yeah.
She's known no life without it.
Yeah.
So Everything is selfies. Everything is on display. Everything is on Facebook, all this sort of stuff. And I feel like they are a generation who thinks because they can put themselves on display like this, that they are special little snowflakes that need special treatment and have high expectations. And they are, what's the word? When you expect you should get something.
Entitled.
They are entitled. Thank you. Yeah. So I, like I said, I'm not trying to be old man about this, but I sense that is a thing. And I'm also willing to say maybe it's because I'm getting older and I'm just perceiving it this way.
Right.
But I'd like to roll into what that is. What is that? And what do we call it? Is there a term for it? Is there a way to curb it as a parent? Like, what is it? Is it that negative? Is it really that big of a deal?
Well, I think you have to take a broader view. So you look at, and maybe a note to everyone listening, Scott and I both struggled to say words.
So, see, it's not just me. They so we need know this.
IBIT to show up every once in a while and just correct us with English. Yeah. But we were talking earlier about the generations, what they're labeled and called. And and I don't know what they called anyone before the greatest generation. Was that the...
They were the World War II folks, right?
Yeah, that's the greatest generation. You know, the ones coming of age during the war and that time, right? And right. then before, was it the Great Depressionists? Like, I don't know.
They were the tightwads.
It was the... Charleston dancers, whatever. That's the 20s.
The roaring dancers. 20s.
But I don't know if we started naming generations. Anyway, so you've got the greatest generation, which has not served, it doesn't serve them by continuing to call them that.
No.
I'm just saying.
Well, they're not around much longer.
I know, right?
But also, isn't it a little bit of a misnomer? Because weren't those people like more racist and more like there were a lot of other issues going on? It right. wasn't just like, you're the greatest generation because I'll give it to them. They were brave.
Yeah.
They fought for causes. They went and enlisted in the army purely out of just a sense of patriotism and right and good.
All those 17-year-olds sneaking in.
It's yes. Yeah. I mean, and it was not because they were trying to get away from mom and dad. They really felt strongly about right. the cause. But on the other hand, we were not letting black folks sit in our restaurants. We weren't, you know, there was a lot of weird under the covers kind of problems going on in that generation.
Right, right. And I think that's actually kind of key to some of this, which is it's a mixed bag. And so the millennials are a mixed bag. They are not just self-absorbed little twerps. Okay. There's much more. But each generation, if you look at it, historically, you have sort of economic factors that play a role. So you take the baby boomers, right? They are born to the greatest generation, and the greatest generation did not have the greatest emotional intelligence, I would say. Not a lot of talking to their kids, or is that a dog?
I don't know why Daisy's barking. I apologize, everybody. My Daisy. Dog has decided today is the day to bark while I'm recording, but anyway.
Right. Anyway.
I don't know.
So you have this kind of dynamic of... So I'm going to talk in terms of the emotional inheritance everybody got. Right.
Right.
So you have the emotional inheritance from the greatest generation to the baby boomers, and it was barely talking to you. I mean, how many stories have you heard or you know about where grandpa never spoke about the war?
Yeah,
it
doesn't. No, right? That's a stereotype, but also I think the truth, like our grandpa Ward, we called him, wouldn't say a freaking peep about any of that time.
Right.
And I don't know why. I never knew why as a kid. I used to think it would be cool if we could hear it.
Right. And I think those who did speak out were just kind of amazing. So what's that Radiohead song?
Which one?
About Patch. He's the last guy from World War One?
Oh, right.
It's beautiful.
It's good. Yeah. It's better than that one they play too much. wait, are we forgetting another word or term here or name? We can't
Patch
remember.
Adams Patch Adams is not Adams. The name.
Patch Adams.
No, whatever this song is about. It's about the last guy, I think in World War One, or maybe it was World War II. It must be World War II, where he gave a speech and he was... kind of freaked out for the future. Like, you guys got to work this out. The next time it will be chemical.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they put it to a song that's kind of creepy when you really listen, but the music's pretty. Yeah. Anyway, that idea that like, you just don't, it just wasn't spoken of because of the horror, which is understandable. Right. Yeah. But at the same time, this sort of.
Pent it up, hide it, lock it away.
Right. You also had sort of the 50s at that point, which everyone loves to idealize as the greatest time. When it was probably the most unequal moment.
It was a great It was a great time. Maybe the best time white males have ever had.
Ever had.
Yeah.
And they're holding on, right?
They were rocking.
They cannot let go. Well, and it also had this sort of very traditional roles were set. I mean, you historically on the farm, you had, you know, men and women working side by side, families. And I mean, that's the reason you had kids. Yeah. We have four kids for no reason.
Right. Right.
Because they're not working on any farm.
Right.
Anyway, so you have all this interesting shift in how families look and how they act. And then you have sort of your, the parents of baby boomers are not emotionally super in tune or involved or talking to them.
Yeah.
And then you take the baby boomers. And if anyone's listened to the show, you know, I kind of hate baby boomers.
You're not a fan of that.
Not
whole
a fan.
Thing.
And I would say partly because there's so many of them and they're all getting old at the same time, as if they could help that. But, and
these are the hippies, right? This would have been the 60s.
Some of them are the hippies, not all of them.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of a, it's a big 20 year kind of block. But, but I think the other piece to that is that there is a self-indulgence and a sort of, I mean, here's the irony. This is why therapists, there's thousands of them, is because of the baby boomers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sort of self-reflection, a lot of my dad never talked to me and, you know, kind of the dynamic of coming from that. They're also,
doesn't that entire industry kind of owe itself to, though, to that era in a weird, real way?
I would agree. Also the ski industry, also the,
I didn't know about the skiing.
The new age, anything comes from that group.
Yeah.
I mean, you think of, I bet there's, hardly an industry we can't find besides maybe internet world.
Oh, I would argue even then, because what you've got, the Steve Jobs of the world and these guys,
right.
I mean, they were direct.
They were baby
boomers. Oh, they were right out of that era of expand your mind, man.
Yeah.
Think about it this way or whatever.
So
and some of them
that.
Experimented with drugs and stuff, all that stuff.
And maybe there's also like, my dad never spoke to me and...
yeah, some of that.
And so I'm going to, you know... burn myself out, changing the world by creating an iPhone or whatever, you know. Okay, so you have all of that dynamic leading up to, so then the baby boomers.
I'm sure
boomers,
it was that simple. That's all it was. Just make an iPhone. It's all good.
And then you have those, you know, baby boomers have children. So they're pretty self-indulgent. They're the wealthiest generation to ever live on the planet.
Yeah.
There's also this piece about optimism, not optimism, sort of expectations. Their expectations were pretty low based on the expectations they saw in their home life with their families.
Right.
When medium incomes were, you know, the richest and the poorest, it was about a $20,000 difference versus, you know, what it is today.
Sure.
So it was the most average time to be living. Mm-hmm. And so their expectations were kind of medium. And then they did well in a lot of ways and made a ton of money and there's a ton of them and, you know.
And they're everywhere.
And they're everywhere. And so their expectations... minus reality equals happiness. They're a pretty happy bunch on some level, or just at least they can pay for things to make them happy.
Right.
So
they're not hard up for the cash and stuff. But if you've got, I want to go back real quick to the World War II people who had come home from the war and not say anything, who believed it was better to just put your head down and go for it, and not all this talking and dancing around is a waste of time kind of attitude, right. Which served them well to deal with the trauma of their time,
right.
And the situation of the world in their time.
Right.
Their kids, however, like all generations, want to go a different way.
Right.
Swing it all the way forward. I feel like that's what's happened here a little bit. There was we were called slackers in my age range. And I feel like a lot of ways we had to fight to get out of that label. And now that my generation's having kids and we're putting people into the world and those kids are now growing up, those kids seem to be just like the kids, just like these hippie kids to their parents from the war, seem to be flying in the face of what we think is good and right.
Right.
I feel like I'm just on the train of life. Like this is just, if I'm being honest with myself, this is just the way it is. Right. And it doesn't matter what the previous generation did for good, for bad, for ill, for great, whatever. The next one wants to go a different way because that's the way this works.
Right.
Is there any avoiding it?
Well, no. And I think you're right. But there's also this newfangled idea, which is called adolescence, that didn't exist before. So previously in agrarian societies, you old enough to shovel manure, you're a man, right? Like you're on it and you're working and you're inheriting the farm and people live to 36 anyway. So adolescence is a creation of this. The century before this one. Mm. And it really happened after that World War II. I think someone could argue a little earlier, but just, you know, with the Industrial Revolution, essentially you got people off farms. And you know, maybe child labor in a factory was the same thing for a period of time, but eventually we got those laws that prevented that.
Yeah.
And then you have free time. I mean, free time is a big thing that just didn't exist for kids. And it's one of the concerns of most kids. There's a lot of studies that show, you know, kids who have free time, or even if they're scheduled to death,
yeah,
but they are not enjoying what they're doing, or they're not striving to do it. Their mom has just scheduled their day. The more trouble they get into, the more miserable they are, the more, you know, they kind of just, it's sort of rebel, whether you schedule me or not, because there's not a lot of meaningful work for an adolescent, right? So you take, okay, go back to this really quick. So you have baby boomers having kids, which is us.
Right. That's us.
And so we were maybe the last generation of just go out and play with your friends.
I think so.
And one of the reasons, I think, is sort of the 24-hour news cycle concept that started news as a business.
Yeah.
Became a business, which is we need more customers and we need them all the time. And we need business, and what works and is our basest humanity, which is what bleeds leads. And so scary. So we get stories from the 80s and 90s of child molestation and kidnapping when in fact, all those numbers are going down, you know, New York City, there's a lot of scary stuff going on in a period of time. And now it's totally safe. So you have nothing following the trend of what we're actually viewing.
What we're seeing is not what we're seeing. If you're looking at the data, what we see on the screen is not what's happening.
Right. Yeah. Which potentially those things are correlated, which is we're more scared. So we're not outside. So we're not getting robbed.
Well, I wondered about that. Right. Like if I hear enough about shark attacks, have I avoided the beach enough to actually cause shark attacks to go down by me not going to the beach? You know what I mean?
Right.
Not that I care about shark attacks, but I do, you know, I remember right just prior to 9/11, there was a lot of talk about shark attacks being on the rise. And on the rise, it meant like two this year instead of the one last year.
Right.
And that's because they had nothing else to talk about because they got 24 hours to fill with news. And then 9/11 happened and everybody went, I mean, I hate to say this. It was a horrible thing. It was an awful tragedy. But the 24-hour news networks were having a heyday. Yeah. They enjoyed the hell out of that. Because now they suddenly had a million things to talk about constantly for 24 hours. And now they could really compete and everybody had to like listen to whatever channel was the best. And that was just the way it was. So they benefited from hideous things like that.
Right.
And I feel like since then, it's always this battle to find the next big loud thing.
Right.
And like you said, what bleeds leads. And typically when they find something like that, it's like gold for them.
They'll milk it forever.
I don't know where I was going with that. But the point is, we were a generation where maybe the last generation that got to do this, you know, it's never the same with every individual. Obviously we're talking about big blanket sort of macro level shifts in society, but my parents would say, or I'd say, mom, I'm going to go hang out at Mark's house or whatever. All right. Be home by dinner if you're hungry. Like it wasn't even like a mandatory be home and eat. Yeah. It was like just whenever. And I'd go out and we'd find snakes and we'd climb trees and we'd do weird stuff and we'd get home and I might even have done something dumb. We set fire to something that almost caused a barn to burn down, but we blew it out just in time. But we made it home. Everything was fine. And I came home with an experience or set of experiences that my kids don't get now.
Yeah.
Because society, not even just me as a parent, but society says, they can't go anywhere without a cell phone. Are you kidding me? What are you, crazy? They can't go out at night. If they go out after 8 o'clock at night, who knows what will happen to them? Like we are force fed that by voices in society on the news and otherwise to tell us to just be so freaking careful that that our kids are going to get hurt no matter what they do, where they go.
Right.
Is this whole millennial thing and the way we perceive them as being entitled and special little snowflakes, kind of our fault then.
Right. And what we do is, so we have we're the last vestige of that, right?
Right.
But how do we parent? So I love when, you know, when the internet was new and grandma thought she should email everyone these stupid lists of how the world was better when grandpa was on the earth and you kids these days.
Yeah.
I mean, that is so old. There are quotes from Aristotle that say like, this will ruin kids' brains. And he was talking about writing. You know what I mean?
They still kind of do it too.
Yeah.
The chain letters are still popular with the grandmas. The gramophone will
empty our concert halls and ruin our lives, right? So yes, normal. And that's, you kind of
describe
it.
The radio will destroy the gramophones and the television will destroy radio and the internet will destroy television. And it's just this cycle.
So all of that sort of aside, I think if we get a little micro on this, what happens when, you know, baby boomer grandparents are the most nervous. They're worse. They did not raise us this way, but now they are safety freaks. And there is a reason. It's because they just watch the news all the time, right?
Yeah.
So there is this element of we're human. We cannot avoid sort of taking in information that puts us in a position to protect ourselves or someone else. That right. is what we're, our brains are geared to do. So I see a car accident. My brain memorizes the color, the smell, the time of day, the season, you name it. My body has now made an imprint of what this thing is that terrifies me to no end. And I never want this to happen again. Right. So I will see that color. I'll drive on that road again. I'll smell the same smell. It will be fall, whatever it is. And it will trigger responses. And so we feel a little crazy. But the truth is our body just said, I am not letting you get hurt. So I'm going to do all the stuff I've been evolved to do. But what ends up happening is we do this on a nightly basis before bed.
I do it.
We're like, what can I see that will scare the crap out of me? Yeah. Which I think part of the sort of zombie apocalypse.
Like the current craze.
Thing yeah. is it's sort of like be prepared for the worst. I mean, we are built to be prepared for the worst, right? Yeah. So when we parent our kids, I mean, I feel like it is a constant battle for me. So I have an example from today. So Abe had a baseball game.
And Abraham is seven.
What? Eight and a half.
Just for context for people wondering.
Yeah, just he's 8 and a half and pretty responsible and is dying to be more independent. Just, mm-hmm. you know, and the reality is I'm much more, I always say I wish I was a mom in the 70s because I'd be like, peace out. I'll see you like if you want dinner. That would be me.
Yeah.
And yet he has no peers that have any freedom. Mm-hmm. There are not kids wandering the neighborhood. And any kid who is found wandering the neighborhood, everyone judges that mother, right? Yeah. That's kind of the MO. Yeah. So he goes to this baseball practice. He's with his buddy. And I drop him off and I tell him, walk home when you're done because it's at his elementary school, which is 2 minutes from our house. So he comes. I mean, it's late. It's like 12:30. They're supposed to be home at 12. And I'm like, okay, what are they doing? So I have to stop myself from going, oh, are you going to regret being the only mom who ever lets their kid do this? You know? And instead, I literally kind of battle that voice like, okay, come on.
That's a layer I hadn't thought about because people are not only now ultra worried about the kid walking home.
Yeah.
They're ultra worried about the judgment of other people if you do decide to let your kid walk home.
Right. That moment of, will I ever forgive myself? And yeah. and I'm tending that kid and his mom is a worrywart. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
She'd be 10 times worse.
Sure.
Anyway, so about 12:30, they walk in the driveway and they said that their baseball coach just wanted to wait with them and almost refused to let him walk home. Like he was so worried. Like, are you sure your mom said this?
Well, it's because now he's feeling two kinds of fear. One, well, I genuinely don't want these kids to get hurt and I'm believing everything I see on the news, but also I don't want to be the guy they all point to if something bad happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally get it. And it dawned on me, I have to inform other parents of what is okay for me.
Yeah.
So I need to drop him off at baseball and say to the coach, they can walk home. And he'll go, well, okay.
Yeah, he'll be fine with that.
He won't care.
Yeah.
He just needs to be off the hook. So I think this isn't all a bad thing that people are watching out for each other's kids and, you know, it's community effort, but it's fear-based. Maybe there's a balance, I guess, right?
No, there is a balance. That's the key. And I don't know what it is. I felt like I kind of had that as a kid, but I know that my mom and dad weren't flipping out at night worrying about me. Now, if I said I'd be home at midnight and didn't come home until 2, well, that's different. That's not even a thing about are you being safe. It's that you lied to me and now you're in trouble.
Right.
You should have come when I said you were going to come and now we're going to have some harder rules or whatever. But that's different than be home at midnight or the demon will get you or whatever the scary thing of the day is. Right. We didn't have any of that. It was just go out with your friends, have a good time, be safe, don't be stupid. If you have any questions, let me know.
Right.
It was easier for them. It was easier for us. We felt like we had some freedom. They felt like they had some freedom from the kids.
Right.
This doesn't happen now.
Right.
And I admit today to feeling occasionally the same. Like Taylor will text me on a winter night. It's snowing outside and say, and she's not even living here. Right. She's kind of out of my purview. She's an adult now.
Right.
But she'll still text me and say, yeah, I'm going to come over tonight. I'll stay tonight. And then tomorrow we'll hang out or whatever. Oh, okay, great. And then I think, oh my gosh, she's in her car. It's snowing. She's going to crash. This is awful. Maybe I should go get her. Right. Like I go through that same kind of thing occasionally. So yeah. I'm willing to admit there's a chunk of this that's kind of my fault. But I wonder more importantly, how many patients do you get? Clients, whatever. What do you call them?
I call them clients.
But traditionally they'd be called patients, right? Yeah. But you call them clients.
When they lay on my couch, I call them a patient.
Wait, do you have a couch to lay on and all that?
Yeah.
Stereotype.
What do you think they sit on?
Well, I don't know.
They're on like this, a rock in the middle of the room.
Well, no, I didn't think it was like an interrogation. Like we have this set up here.
You have one light bulb hanging down.
But how many of them come in, maybe young and old, but maybe in this generational gap I'm talking about, that the problems they're having and the anxieties they're feeling or whatever are all stemming from this sense of I can't go anywhere without being in great danger.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, as if we lived in like the Amazon and there were some actual threat. Now, cars, danger, whatever. You know, there's legitimate things that we have to steer clear of and, you know, be careful about. The problem is we're saturated with fear messages and safety messages and, you know, and understandably, less of us are dying from a car accident because we wear a seatbelt, but we also drive faster, so we're dying because of that. Or now we're texting, or, you know, there's all that stuff. But I think what, I mean, if you think, take one kid, take you.
Sure.
You have to fight that instinct, that protection instinct, mm-hmm. so you don't destroy your kid.
Yeah.
Now, so take the average family. Right. You're raised by baby boomers. You are doing your thing. And suddenly, maybe your parents didn't protect you and you were abused or you sure. had some terrible experiences. You were bullied and no one stepped in. I mean, we're now at zero tolerance with bullying, which has, there's a backlash to that to some extent
yeah,
for these
kids.
Some
people are, yeah.
Sort of low skills and some other things. I'm not saying real bullying, but I'm saying like kids leaving other kids out.
And then calling that bullying.
Yeah, it's yeah. kind of life,
well,
right?
Don't we do this, though? This is what society does. We swing way too far the yeah. other direction. Right. And then it's just going to, and maybe ultimately this is all moot because it'll just swing back. Like, doesn't that happen most of the time?
I don't know. I mean, has political correctness swung back?
I feel like it tries to. You yeah. know, like you'll see things crop up. You know, I'm trying to give a good example here, but, you know, we live in a world where political correctness and watching what you say is so paramount and people are terrified to say anything to offend anybody.
Right.
But we also live in a time where South Park's never been more popular. And that show is all about equal opportunity offending.
Right.
It's all about not picking a side and calling everybody on the carpet and right. saying terrible things about everybody.
Right.
And that can exist and thrive and survive at the same time as other stuff does. It's the whole, like, it's like, what's it like? It's like if you're going to burn books, someone's going to figure out a way to read books.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah.
We're just flipping back the other direction where it's a little bit too far. And I'm a big fan of, like, we were talking about this, it was a while ago now, but that thing in Arizona with the whole, you know, should businesses have to serve gay people or not?
Oh, yeah.
My opinion on it is kind of complicated because on the one hand, I don't think businesses should be told to do anything that they don't want to do.
Right.
But on the other hand, I also think those business owners shouldn't be jerks and should go ahead and serve everybody because who cares?
So you're talking about the photographers, right?
Yeah, that whole thing that started. And then there was the law they were trying to pass and it got shot down and the governor almost signed it in and blah, blah, blah. In Arizona, whatever, they're weird over there and they take things in all kinds of crazy directions. But
hey, everybody in Arizona.
There was so, we love you guys, but, and I have great friends in Arizona and we have family in Arizona.
Yeah,
but
well.
It's so I don't even know how to kind of get my head around it because it's so, yes, that's not cool.
Yeah.
But let's not swing so far that we're making everyone do exactly what we say.
Right.
There's a real,
there's
historical precedence for this, both yeah. politically and historically with big nations. We're talking about Hitler before the show.
Yeah.
And I don't like to compare things to Hitler. It's just too easy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of that, like this idea of, you know, you start small and you work your way up to big swath changes to the way people think and act and what they're allowed to do or say. And
right.
I'm not a fan of being told what to do, but I'm a fan of self-regulating what's good and right to do.
Right.
Like I want to be able to do the right thing in a given situation,
have
but I don't want to be told.
It.
Yeah. I don't want to be told that I have to do it. Right. I want to just do it.
Right.
And I know that seems to some people, well, yeah, if everyone did that, we would, but I realize those, you know, that's a complicated issue. There's way more shades of gray than I'm even giving it here. But, but to me, it's all tied to the same issue.
Can I just say one thing about the photographers? You sue them, you have to service, you have to take pictures at our wedding. All I could think about was the awkward, you're taking our pictures. Like if it literally turned into them taking the pictures at the wedding,
right?
Think about a photographer, like how much they could jack up your wedding pictures.
Oh, they could completely jerk them
right.
around.
Right. Yeah. Or just how you, that dude has to get everyone to smile and anyway, I just thought, of course I go to the awkward, how that actually plays out.
You moment. Have to though, because that's all that matters. In the end, if it's just conversation until the rubber meets the road
right.
and when the rubber meets the road and the guy's actually taking photos, what does that actually mean?
Right.
Well, are they all bad? Are they blurry? Is he purposely doing something weird with them? Is he telling people to photobomb the most, you know, important shot? Like,
yeah. Cause I find most photographers awkward generally. Like, You want me to what? You want me to fake laugh with my kids right now? Like, I just find that awkward. And then to imagine they hate you.
I don't like any of it.
Super awkward. Okay, wait. We got to bring this back.
So bring it back. Bring it back
to the kids. Yeah. So if our generation is raising kids, I mean, and your kids are... You had kids a little younger than me.
Started younger, yeah.
Started younger.
24 or 25 I was when I had my first.
Oh, so. I guess I was 26.
That's not, yeah.
Not too different. But so you have this, the transfer of sort of issues, let's call it. So, you know, you take whatever one generation's, and we're talking bigger at this point, but individually as well. What issues do we sort of give to the kid? So our fear, we pass that on. Yeah. How does a kid know? I mean, find an animal in nature and watch them interact with their mother or father about how to survive. Right. And it's what to be afraid of, what to do, what not to do. Right.
Right.
And so if we are so germophobic and everyone has to be protected and every, you know, nothing safe and all of our playgrounds are rubber and there's like, they're 2 inches off the ground, you know,
right.
No one's ever going to get hurt. It's kind of ingrained in their world. So when they're faced with decisions and risks, this is where the price is being paid.
Yeah.
Is that they then have to take risks. At the same time, this is a generation that you know, has access to more than anyone has ever had in certain regards. And some cool things that have come out of it, and not that the Arab Spring has turned into, you know, some smooth thing, but what an amazing...
Like anything, it's complicated.
Exactly, it's complicated. Right. But what an amazing experience and event and sure. Like unheard of. I mean, would Hitler have gotten as far as he did if
probably
he had
not.
Tweets?
So social media would have changed the entire outcome of Europe during that era. Right. There's no question about it.
So they have a potential and a, you know, all this stuff that's so great. But at the same time, there's an interesting book called The Paradox of Choice. And it's like, there's too much. Too much option. So
the whole idea
sort of
that if I want to go get a piece of pie, it's better for me to have 3 choices than 50, even though it seems like it should be 50 would be the better option.
And I would say, particularly as Americans, it's like, I want all the choices. Yeah. I deserve
have,
you know, 227 cereal brands to choose from. And so then there's a paralysis of choice and there is the fear of risk. And you look at anyone who's done anything great. They have to risk. They have to lose. They have to fail. And if we have saved them from failing at every turn, you know, we're in trouble. So today... Don't call CPS on me, everyone, because I know you're all judging. In fact, I think...
What's CPS?
CPS is Child Protective
Services. Oh, yeah.
Ira Glass said this. He says, in America, it is a pastime to judge how other people are parenting. Yeah. And it really is. It's baseball and judging other parents.
Yeah.
And so I'm sewing some stupid... capes from Frozen, that stupid show. Anyway, just raise money for my school.
Wendy calls them shows too. It's not just me. We in the Johnson house, for some reason, movies are shows.
Oh, is that a thing?
Yeah. And people drive me. People are sending me emails constantly. Please stop calling movies shows. Shows are for TV. Movies are movies. I'm like, I can't help it. Someone will say, hey, what'd you think of the new Lord of the Rings? Ah, it's a good show. I really liked it. It's Dad. We got it from Dad. Hmm. He always said show. A movie, he always say a dinner and a show. I'll take you to dinner and a show. And I think that worked back in the 20s when it meant Broadway or something. But and when he was teaching us...
A
picture show. A moving picture show. A talkie.
See, here's the scary thing about this endeavor here is I'm going to learn things about myself I didn't know. And this is one.
Yep, there
that
you go.
I say show and
you
it's
say
not
show
a thing.
Instead of movie every time.
Wow.
And it's only here. It's like fry sauce in Utah.
Right.
No one else knows what pink sauce is anywhere else.
But I don't have fans writing to me letting me know. So
I know. I have this great corrective culture out there.
It's
that
helpful.
I can rely on.
My feedback loop is just my own head, which is
not trust me.
Good.
We'll get plenty for this. I doubt any of it will be Wendy's got to quit saying show. But I just wanted to point it out.
Wendy's
anyway.
Got to stop blaming white men for everything.
Yeah. We're okay. We're all right. Over here. Anyway,
so,
you were saying.
I don't know. What was he saying?
You're saying, so then the donkey said to the monkey, how'd we get in here? No,
and
I don't know what it
then,
was. I don't know where you were.
Oh, the good and the bad. It all comes together. Oh, okay. So here's part of it. Oh, that risk-taking thing. Oh, Pete. Here we go. So Pete, we all know.
Back to the CPS, right.
Pete's like Therapy Thursday.
Makes a lot of sound.
Mascot.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was sewing these stupid capes. So I had left out... like a pin cushion. So it's full of pins. And I look over and Pete has it and he's 2, right? And he is taking out the pins and he's looking at them and he's putting them back in. And I have that moment, that debate that I have a lot, which is he isn't hurting himself. He's exploring you know, I could grab that from him and that is not safe.
You want to wrestle it from him.
Kind of. There's that part of me. And then there is this part of me that, you know, he will actually be less dangerous the more access he has to dangerous things with some basic supervision, right?
Of course.
So this kid finds knives everywhere we go. Have I told you this? He found one in Ken's office.
Yeah, no, I saw him somewhere doing something with a knife.
Yeah.
Here, I think.
Yeah, the other day, he's in my garage. He pulls out an axe. I didn't even know we owned an axe. It's like he has a metal thing in his head that attracts metal
weapons.
And, yeah. And so, you know, I have to make a decision. Am I gonna stress him out by freaking out when I interact with him about these scary things? But I know him well enough to know that kid will copy what I do. I can do something pretty complicated. I will find him 2 minutes later on a chair, grabbing the thing I was doing and doing it right.
Yeah.
It's creepy, right?
Yeah.
But I got to nurture that. But I still have to battle that. Oh my gosh, he's going to poke himself in the face with the
needle.
If he's
standing, so let me ask you this. If he's standing there with a pincushion, the fear is not that he's going to accidentally prick a finger and go, oh, and then mom, what happened? And you explain it. If that's all the risk there was, no one would care.
Right.
Because then it is, you know, it seems like an easy learning experience. The problem is he's going to take one of them in your imagination. He's going to take one and jam it into his eyeball.
Yeah. Or swallow it.
Blind for life. Or swallow it. Exactly. I almost swallowed a pin when I was younger. That was bad news.
Yeah.
Real bad. I swallowed a quarter once that just about, according to Dad, killed me.
Right.
So there is that side of it. And I always err on the side of he's going to poke his eye out.
Right.
And I would have grabbed it. And I would have grabbed it for two reasons. One, Peter's not mine. So I would have felt this extra pressure.
Yeah, like you're the responsible adult.
Yeah, I can't teach him a lesson about it's okay to have a little danger. I have to be the one that steps in and takes it.
Yeah.
But I think I would also, even if I was, he was my direct descendant, I think I'd still have a hard time with that.
Right, right. And so every time there's kind of a question and a debate. But I'm going to argue that one of the reasons I can do this is I see the bigger picture. I'm always thinking, okay, down the road.
Yeah.
What am I nurturing in him by freaking out and removing anything that's not safe? I mean, we've never childproofed our house. That's kind of a method we've had of you never will figure out what are your boundaries and what are you not. And I'm sure there's kids drinking poison somewhere. And
I should have childproofed
the
VCR when it had a peanut butter jelly sandwich in it one day. But other than that, I don't think I've ever worried about that.
Right. And so not everyone's so lucky. However, I do think you sort of create an undercurrent of sneaking around to try to explore and knowing your mom's going to freak out. I think there's also this just fear then. So now we kind of have this ingrained fear, which comes from, you know, mom, we have three kids or two kids or one kid instead of nine these days. So if that one dies, we're screwed. So we are trying to keep them really careful, you know, and we do this with our pets and we do this with, sort of give so much credence to this human being. So they are that snowflake you were talking about.
Yeah.
And then we don't allow them to have any risk. And I think it's always more about us.
Well, then they're screwed because if the net effect of that helicopter parenting is that they can't take, that the parent has not been able to take a risk and now this is all the kid knows.
Right.
Well, then the next generation isn't going to be that switchover I'm talking about. We're not going to have hippies rebelling against their warped time parents.
Yeah.
We're going to have is people who can't make a decision because they can't take a risk any more than the last generation did. So what they'll do, and I believe this is true and it's in me a little bit. If I'm feeling, sometimes it's weird. If I'm feeling a little anxious about something, the way I deal with it, like the other day, I'm on the treadmill. I'm like, I need to watch something while I am on the treadmill. I could watch an old episode of Dick Van Dyke. I could watch something newer than that, something happy, something whatever.
Yeah.
No, I think I'm going to watch Silence of the Lambs again. And I know when I do it, that the reason I'm craving that is I'm craving a thing that's dangerous, risky, and
that matches your mood.
That matches my mood and that also takes me away from the safety, but knowing that it's safe because it's just a stupid movie.
Yeah.
But it gives me all the human, like, you keep talking about this, but I think that's the reason we have an uptick in popularity of horror movies. More and more of them are PG-13, so bigger audiences can go.
Yeah.
This isn't even about a content thing for me. This is strictly about humans access. Go so long. We are evolutionarily prepared for dangerous stuff, and we go long enough without any of it, and then we start to crave it in a way that maybe isn't positive. Maybe some of that is, I don't know, but it's like an outlet. Scary video games for some people do this. Scary, violent video games may do this for other people. For me, I just want to see a stupid slasher movie once in a while.
Right.
And I think part of that is that thing where I'm being told the world is dangerous and everything's terrible. Let me see a thing where it's terrible, but I'm safe to watch it because it's on that screen and I don't have to get in there and fight personally and whatever.
Yeah. No, I think you nailed it because it's a controlled environment, you know, on some level. I mean, it's been really interesting to watch Abe figure out his what is real and what is not real.
Yeah.
Because it goes from terrifying
right.
to, oh, you do that with cameras and tricks and computers. I can still enjoy it. And I can still get all the rush from it, but I don't have to worry about sleeping at night. I don't have to worry about someone's going to come get me. And I think that's true. And I would say, you know, this is turning into an anxiety show, but generally we have amped up our anxiety like never before.
Right.
And I can't blame it all on 24-hour news, but it definitely, whether it's the egg or the chicken, it's definitely a piece of it, which is there's so much to be afraid of. And so what you're responding is you are physiologically anxious for no reason.
Right.
So what we do as humans is if we feel a certain way, we got to figure out why we're feeling that way. So we make it up. Usually it's a story. Like I might implode right now, or I might spontaneously combust, or I'm going to lose my job, or my wife hates me. Or, you know, you just find somewhere to latch that feeling onto. But I think the feeling is more of a consequence of daily nonstop stimulation of the electronic kind, as well as entertainment, as you know, jumping around. We are not evolved for that mentally.
No.
We might be a couple generations from now. The kids we're having now might literally be wired differently.
Yeah,
because the second you know,
we're evolutionary.
Touched an iPad, he knew you could slide an image.
I mean, I know that we are evolutionarily. Yes, we're not prepared for. Perhaps the consequences of these things, but we are evolutionarily ready for the progress we've made with it. In other words, we get to touch screens that kids intuitively understand. Well, that's because we are at a place where we can do it. It's not something that nobody can get or understand. It's all just part of human interface and we just get better and better at it. So I don't even think you have to take giant leaps in evolution to get to a place where a kid knows how to, you know, use the future tech of tomorrow. It's just whether or not this stuff impacts negatively other aspects of human life that up till now haven't been challenged in that way.
Right.
And for me, what I see in this generation we keep talking about is their inability to, how do I put this? They turn to it. There's this song on the internet right now that was a YouTube thing that's super annoying. And it's called, in fact, I have
this is what the fox says.
No, not that terrible thing. I freaking hate that thing. But it's also, I mean, that may be a part of this, but there's this thing where at the beginning of the song, it's these vapid, empty-headed girls in this bathroom at a dance club talking about, do you think that guy likes me? I don't know. I only have 5 likes on my Instagram photo. I think I'm going to take it off the thing. What do you think? It's just like this conversation with this techno beat in the behind it.
Yeah.
It's also meant to be very parody and they're making fun of this.
Yeah.
But at some point, she's talking about all these serious relationship issues and I don't think she likes me and that girl's ugly and she's so ratchet and all this stuff, right? And then she interrupts everybody and says,
first, let me take a selfie.
She says, first, let me take a selfie. Now, I think there's some poetry in this because what she's saying is, life's complicated, life's hard, relationships are hard, I'm working on this, I'm working on that. But I can interrupt it at any time with this thing that I think is so freaking important that is not important at all. Right. In the end, it's just not important. And I feel like their lives are full of things, while fun, distractionary. Is that even a word?
Totally.
It works.
You're talking
me.
To me. So yes, it's a word.
All of these things are things that burn time.
Yeah.
But don't matter in the end. I do them too. So this isn't me on some high horse.
Right.
I do it all the time. There's lots of things like me. What'd they all say on Twitter today? Who cares, really?
Right.
I mean, it really doesn't matter, but we make it matter, and then it only looks this stupid from far off. Like, there's a whole generation that thinks that taking a selfie instead of doing something else is the most important thing they can do right now.
Right. And do you think one day it'll be like, here's 400 of my selfies, and I'm so embarrassed? Because selfie will have been removed from the dictionary at that point or something. I don't know. But let me say something. You said intuitive to touch a screen. The fact that we are evolved enough that it wouldn't be intuitive. It wouldn't be if we weren't involved to handle, to technology.
Yeah.
What we are not evolved is that emotional intelligence. Sort of, I mean,
yes.
Look at the generational, you know, hand-me-downs we get from, we start with the greatest generation, we're only going that far back, who, you know, didn't have any of that skill. It was just stiff upper lip. And then self-indulgent baby boomers. And then, you know, Gen X, Gen Y, whatever, where it's sort of like we're our expectations of life should match our parents, but economically it's not happening.
Right.
And then the gap between the rich and the poor gets bigger and bigger, and the expectations of everyone is all. So our unifying thing is media, right?
Yeah,
that
yeah.
says this is what happiness is. These are your peers. This is that social comparison theory. Our tribe is no longer just who your neighbor is or even your family or some smaller unit. It is everyone, right?
That's interesting.
So it's intuitive, but the emotional parts, we're not caught up. And I'll tell you the consequences we're paying is depression and anxiety through the roof. So World Health Organization, you know, top three concerns. Number one in the next 20 years will be depression. I mean, it is rampant. So what is it? So let's go back to these kids. Ego development happens in, you know, in stages and in sections, and it goes along. So when you didn't have the world as your peer group, you know, you could develop your ego based on those around you. And you, some could argue that's a negative thing because it's not fair. You know, your own circumstances should not dictate how
you're born
see
on
yourself.
A crappy corner of Philadelphia somewhere. That's
right.
Not your fault.
Right.
Yeah.
We love you.
No offense. But you know what I mean? Like if you're born in a poverty stricken family,
right.
That was your judgment circle. Today, your judgment circle mm-hmm. is how do I stack up to Kanye, or how do I look compared to this, my favorite actress, or even just, you know, there's a lot of people worship going on the kind of the lower levels. You look on Facebook and find somebody who's got 3 million followers who just happens to be a very pretty girl.
Yeah.
And you read comments like, I wish I was half as pretty of you. You are the vision of perfection. Usually not that good of English, but but you know what I mean? The grammar's usually a little rough there. But the point is they've got all these other middle ground people to hold a candle to that weren't just top tier Hollywood cream of the crop.
Right.
Aspire to be like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. Now you've got all this middle ground, these people that are in these, you know, B levels and even this low level, just some kid in high school who everyone thinks is hot or is funny or, you know, the Vine app is full of this.
Yeah.
Vine is basically, actually Vine reminds you of the problem.
Yeah.
Like you watch Vine videos and you go, oh, really? Is this who we are? What is this that we are? What are we doing?
Right.
And again, I try to temper it all and go, Scott, part of this is because you're aging out of it.
Yeah.
I am willing to admit that.
Right.
I stay up on stuff. I'm ahead of the curve on a lot of things. I probably always will be. But at some point, part of that is me.
So is there value, though, in someone who's aged out to comment? You know, is there value?
Yes.
And culturally, we make old people irrelevant.
I know, it sucks.
But you know the baby boomers will make it all about them somehow.
Yeah.
And maybe that'll shift. I don't know. But really, like, we opt out that there's no wisdom. There's nothing that they offer. And maybe it's because we get all crotchety, like, you kids these days versus, hey, you know what? I mean, I spoke to a group of people, young people recently, and was saying young people.
See? Jeez, grandma.
I know, right? And I said something, I kind of described myself as like, I remember the day when there was privacy and, you know, a picture that was taken of me. Wow. I almost told you what it was of, but it was pretty embarrassing.
Yeah.
Was a paper copy. And, you know, it was being passed around and everyone was laughing and I finally got a hold of it and could burn it.
Yeah. And that was the end of it.
And it was just.
Yeah. That doesn't happen now.
Not even that big of a deal, but it was helpful to get it back. And that doesn't exist. And they have no concept of it. So to have no concept is interesting. How you develop your ego. How do you decide who am I in relationship to my peers? Because that is part of ego development. Your peer group helps determine. What do you think?
I mean, part of it is, I mean, I'm too far down the road to care for other reasons, but I think a lot of society just doesn't care. Like, let me put it this way. If you're Anthony Weiner, that might be different because you're doing things that still culturally are causing people to give you a whole lot of consternation, like showing your junk to everybody and it's stuck on the internet forever. But everybody else, if you say to your average, say 20-year-old, hey, are you worried that there's that photo of you on Facebook peeing off the pier at spring break, chances are they're going to say no.
Right.
Are you worried about that affecting your job prospects? They're going to say no. And the reason that most of these guys don't seem to care until it does matter,
yeah.
until someone does say, well, I can't give you that job. We found that photo of you.
Right.
Because it's easy to say. But I think the reason it's easy for them to say is they have all accepted, and to some degree, I have accepted this as truth, that it's that everybody's all out there. It's like, how do you put it? It's like, I always look at Bug's Life as a terrible example. Maybe it's a good example, but the ants only felt oppressed by the grasshoppers until they realized that there are more of them than the grasshoppers and they could rise up anytime and take the whole thing over.
Right.
I feel like there is a youth movement now where they feel that way. What they do online is just life. So that's just no different than anything else. And if they're in an embarrassing, compromising thing, they are among millions of others. It's kind of like, you know, it's the when in Rome idea.
Yeah.
And I think there's some truth to it in that it will matter less as we move forward.
Right.
For example, kids who I grew up with who play video games and love them, who withstood the decades of video games are bad for you, are moving into public life and are taking over jobs like congressmen, senators, and presidents. And some of them, some acting members of Congress are big time game players. A really important ambassador dude who was working over in where was that? Where they had the embassy got attacked and a bunch of the guys got killed.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean.
He
was a huge leader in the online game Eve Online.
And the guy that died.
Yeah,
oh.
And he was playing when the attack happened.
Oh gosh.
So he was off hours, but he was, you know, he lived there. And was playing with these guys, and they're all like, oh.
Benghazi.
Yes, that's it. And he was murdered that day, and there's always these huge memorials in that game for that guy every year and all this stuff. But the point is that people start moving into public life who were once considered the nerds, the geeks, the outcasts, or the whatever.
Right.
So why wouldn't that be any different? You're going to end up with a president one day who did a stupid selfie when he was 15.
Oh, guaranteed. So, this will be inevitable. And the question then is, so does it really matter? Is this just a shift of the guard, and everyone's going to grow up and be the same? But I would say, okay, yeah, probably doesn't matter. But in the end, what is the ego development delay that comes from all this anxiety and all the helicopter parenting and all the control
right.
by the, you know, their parents? And the other thing is, when your parents listen to cool music, how do you rebel?
That's
when
what
your
I ask
parents
my kids.
Are like, my mom wants to go to this concert with me, aka Kim. You know, there's no rebelling. So you have a whole generation that doesn't really have to rebel.
Now, you're just describing my kids. And I don't know to this day, I'm sometimes unsure if that has been a good or a bad thing, because they don't have really anything to rebel against. They don't really have, when there is something to get serious about, we're more into, there's no, don't do that. Why? Doesn't matter. I'm the parent, you're the kid. You live under my house, my rules. We don't talk that way.
Right.
It's, Nick, come here, sit down, let's talk about this. What are the consequences if this happens?
Right.
Make him really think it through and answer the question, and basically say, well, as always, you have the right to choose whatever you want to do. Just know this stuff can happen, and it can, you know, whatever.
Right.
So you put the fear into him a little bit by letting them have the responsibility.
Right.
And I've always prided ourselves on that. Like, that's a good thing. There are days, though, where I wonder, I mean, at least I had stuff to rebel against.
Well, you also make them reliant on you. I can't make a decision unless I process this with my dad.
That's the fear, yeah.
And
that's the downside.
And not that that's horrible. It's emotionally more available and intelligent than maybe another model. But I think the challenge then becomes when they are faced with a decision and dad is dead, or dad is senile at this point, or dad says what you don't want to hear, you have no experience rebelling, and you have no experience taking risks,
right.
and you need to process this through with somebody. Not that that's a bad decision plan.
Right.
But you've got to take risks. In fact, I was listening to this, I guess there's a book out, Jeff Bezos. No one's really done anything on him till just recently. And specifically,
well, his legacy is just now starting. People are going, man, look at he's doing.
He's going to run the world. Anyway.
Big dude.
But when he was a kid, he was in some article. He was like 11 for like super smart kids. And they changed his name. Anyway, the guy tracked down the teacher and talked to him about it. And basically, as a kid, he had crazy ideas like, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to sell this, and I'm going to sell it cheaper. I mean, he had that as an 11-year-old, right? Like, and I think, okay, so not that we need a million Jeff Bezos, but is there anything culturally we are doing that stymies that person? Is it really the kid who has to pull himself out of a tricky situation that really will gain all the skills to get to that place?
Right.
When you have another component to this, which is, you know, those generations of working at the same company for 30 years and pensions and some of that security, the average job holding is 2 years now or four. So, you know, something that is the new norm.
Yeah.
And culturally, are we set up to handle that? And that is a lot of risk taking. So when I see people in their mid-20s, late 20s, they are sort of almost crippled under depression and anxiety from, and they are intelligent, educated. They've got their degrees. They've got job prospects. They cannot function in the workplace very long.
Yeah.
And so some of that is, you know, we've sort of handicapped them in this way.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you do. You just like take them to a camp and give them a knife and say, go survive.
Survive. I don't know. The ultimate challenge, kill another man. Who knows? I mean, the way I see all of that, just to kind of sum up my take on it, is that this may be part of the problem, is that my generation didn't have a moment where they turned and went adult.
Yeah.
We didn't have a moment where we went, all right, that's it. I'm not interested in any of these things I was into as a kid anymore. No more comic books, no more video games, no more television, no more music that's popular. I'm out. Mm-hmm. I am now adult man in my suit and tie, and I'm going to work my 9 to 5, and I'm going to provide for my family, and my kids are going to do what I say. We never had that switch. Right. And because of that, I've never felt a point where I went, I just don't understand the music today. I do understand. Yep. I get it. I know what's popular, why it's bad, why it's good, why it sucks, why it's lame, why it's an earworm, and why some of it's just weird and esoteric. I get it because I never got out of it. I still enjoy it. I like it. I download it. I buy it. I whatever.
Yeah.
Same thing goes with my taste in film or television or any sort of media. I never had that that flip over. Like where old people were like, if it's not big band, it isn't music. Rock and roll is terrible. We didn't have that. There was no switch.
Big band.
All we had was like, man, that classic 70s stuff was really cool in its day. And sure wish Jim Morrison wasn't dead. I'd like to see what he'd do today too. Man, the 80s were crazy. What an awesome time this is to be a kid and grow up with this stuff. And in the 90s, I freaking loved it in the 90s culturally. I had a great time in the 90s. And the 2000s, while, you know, a little bit lame, it was still, I got it. I was in there. I was the first one with a Facebook account, first one with a Twitter account. I'm not trying to make this about me, but my point is that I think I'm indicative of the larger population of people who are parents now.
Yeah.
Who are all just went with it and are still on top of it. And the kids can't come home and go, Dad, why won't you let me go to that concert? Because my answer would be, well, you can totally go to that concert.
Right. Because you know.
Big deal. Because I know.
But you must have a ride and wear 14 seatbelts and have a bubble plastic wrap around your body so you're safe.
It's like we're less worried about all their little moral shortcomings and
it's more physical.
More worried about their physical safety than we used to be. And I don't know why that is. Like I know we've talked about a lot of theories here and a lot of ideas as to why people do this, but and I don't, you know, like I see it more in some of my kids, my other kids. Like Carter is a different egg completely. She's an outlier. She breaks the rules. And I don't mean rules gets in trouble. I mean, she's good.
Yeah.
Other than this weird driving thing, which you need to talk to her about. She's just great. Independent, smart, happy, doesn't need everyone's approval. Everything's wonderful with her. Nick's totally kind of got a chunk of me in him, but he's also kind of this generation of like, well, you've protected me. What am I supposed to do? Kind of mentality. And Taylor's just high anxiety, everything that she can't control. And it's just, you know, you see each of your kids going through this stuff and you ask yourselves, well, what else could I have done? Should I have been some stodgy guy that didn't get it? And then they'd at least be able to go, my dad doesn't understand the internet.
And how would that help?
I apologize. I completely understand it. More than they do.
Sorry, I'm so cool.
I could hack stuff they couldn't dream of. You know, because they don't get, you know, that's just always been the way it is. And they're cool with it. And I'm cool with it. And everyone's cool with it. And I'm not that worried about my kids.
Right.
I feel like we got the balance pretty well figured out. But I do see some of the downsides.
I might just have a new theory brewing here, and that is the onset of adolescence was at a, you know, off the farm, out of the factory.
Yeah.
And what's interesting that we know from brain science now is how different the teenage brain is than the adult brain.
Right.
So I'll talk a little bit about that, and then I'll tell you what my theory is about you. Okay, so a couple things. You know, the prefrontal cortex develops slower and later, and that is your organizational decision-making kind of linear thought process of like, if I do this, I'm going to crash and die. So I probably shouldn't do that. That part doesn't develop until fully till you're 25.
Right.
So you have that developing slowly. And then if that weren't enough, your pleasure centers of the brain are larger than they are in the adult brain. So when you get a buzz, you get a buzz. So you, first of all, you're not thinking straight.
Yeah.
Then you seek out higher and higher risks because you're, you know, trying to feed these giant centers of for pleasure. And then the kind of top of this is the dopamine circuitry does not fully regulate till you're an adult, which means, you know, you're seeking riskier behavior to get more and more dopamine hits and buzzes, right?
Yeah.
So my theory is maybe we're just all maintaining, I think ADD is rampant, which is ultimately underdeveloped prefrontal cortex or, you know, understimulated. Right. That's why we take Ritalin to kind of wake that part
up. It's not a disorder necessarily.
No, I just think it's like everyone's breathing air. Everyone has ADD.
Everyone's doing it.
And we're training ourselves daily with our technology, beep and new email and whatever. Like our brains are always moving, right? So we're trying to adapt, but I think it comes out as a lot of maybe frenetic thinking for people and not calming down, a lot of high stress. We have physical results of this, but so anyway, then you have, like you still do those things that are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a level of, I'm not going to stop being fun. And I think the get out of teenage land, be an adult used to be finally put on a suit and go to work and work there for 30 years. I think that's gone. I wonder if, you know, our brains, it's not that we do have our dopamine circuitry that finds its place.
Sure.
But I also think we just aren't going to settle for the life that was probably pretty darn boring, you know?
Yeah, it looks boring.
So instead of, like, so it used to be only adulthood. So you had maybe a little childhood and then you were an adult. And I think it's gone from, you know, childhood, adolescence to adult. Now it's just a lot.
Even in a time where it was like a lot of gender separation, a kid would turn 10 and that wasn't old enough to carry giant stacks of hay on your back.
Right.
And in the girl's case, oh, you're 10. Well, then you can be elbow deep in the dough we're going to make today for 50 people. Like it seemed like even with that gender inequality, you still had this sense that you're old enough. Go get, let's go work, whatever. Now we've established all of these rules where everybody's kind of untouchable till they're 18.
Yeah. Untouchable, meaning you don't have any sort of basic skills in like how to maintain a house or how to work with a car. You know, there's a lot of impotence that's been created for younger people. They could learn a lot younger. Yeah. I mean, Pete knows how to play with needles.
Yeah, he does.
And hatchets and stuff. But, you know, and so we restrict that development for safety reasons. And then if I hear one more mother of 17-year-olds say to me, if my kid could just learn to clean his room. I mean, they lament later that there's no training that happened. But a lot of that is that we're not even sure what kids can do.
Right.
So then you're 25 and you're kind of learning to cook for yourself for the first time or something. Like maybe there's just arrested development a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you kind of figure it out, I don't know. I mean, a lot of this is uncharted and obviously in so many ways. But I think some of the same things hold true.
And unfortunately, to make the arrested development connection complete, there's a lot of busters right now. Don't you think? A lot of busters tied their moms, you know, to their moms forever. Can't make a decision without everybody's help. Terrified of everything. That's the worry anyway.
Right.
And if you're a buster out there, this is not to belittle anything you're about right now. But I think that I think that's a rough place to be.
Right. And no one wants to be Michael. You. Michael is the oldest child. He's the old generation foot in the other one that says responsible, do what's right, you know. And
he's even worse. He's the second oldest. So you've got Job the idiot.
Oh, Job's the oldest.
Yeah, Job's the oldest. So Job is worse.
Somebody read the literature on birth order and they they switched that because that is not right.
Yeah. Well, I know I can tell you that Taylor feels the most pressure that way as the oldest. And she doesn't, we know what he puts on her. She just feels it. And Nick feels the most, man, what do I got to do kind of attitude about being the third.
Everybody has that same, I mean, it is universal. So you didn't do it. It's just part of being. Yeah, I don't know. I swear they get in line like, oh, you're going to be the oldest? You're kind of uptight. You go.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly. Hey, yeah, and I don't know. I don't know that that's ever really been that different. It's just that whatever the cultural soup is that you're sending him into in that role seems to be significant.
Yeah.
So if the oldest is uptight and worried about everything and controlling, that may have worked in World War II era America.
Right.
Because he went out on the front line and kicked A.
Mm-hmm.
and he led men or whatever. You do it today, they go out there and think they have to solve everything, and there's really nothing left to be solved because it's all being right. solved for them, and so they have a lot of anxiety about what am I supposed to do?
Right.
My job is to be the oldest.
I wonder what the stats are on like lawyers, dentists, doctors. So I think of sort of certain professions that seem like an oldest child.
Oldest child, do you think?
Whereas I think second children, you know, there's a little, there's space for them to screw up and they sometimes do it royally because they still have the same pressures, maybe mom and dad stuff or whatever, but for whatever reason, they get to be the goofy one.
And who knows? We may answer that in yet a future episode of the show, but we're winding down near the end here. I do want to mention a quick email that we got this week. And it's quick in that we can answer it fairly quickly. We don't have a lot of information regarding this person as to where they stand on this issue. My experience is when people are out talking about polyamory and whether or not we people think it's cool or not are generally people that wish it was more common. I could be wrong.
Cooler.
And I don't know who this is. We don't have names. That was part of the point is we didn't ask for your names. We want this to remain anonymous. But they asked this question. It's a big shift from our conversation about kids and helicopter parenting. Who can handle polyamory and who can't? What relationships benefit and do not benefit from this arrangement? So polyamory meaning couples who swing, essentially, right? I mean, unless I've got that wrong.
Just more love than one person.
Right. So so it could be a live-in. It could be swinging on the weekends.
Multiple people.
You have an agreement, whatever.
Yeah.
I assume that that can all be under that tent. Yeah. And if I'm wrong, people will email us and tell us. But what's your take on it? Is it good for relationships? Does it never end well? I mean, you deal with people who have issues like this. Not issues, but will come in and say, yeah, well, part of the problem is blah, blah, blah. I mean, what is the raw data on an actual patient/client for something like this?
I can't answer with data because I don't know.
Yeah.
But I can answer anecdotally. I had one, it's not a couple, it's multiple people who, you know, they had this arrangement and the husband and wife had this arrangement that they could sleep with anyone else, date anyone else, spend time with anyone else, and then they would still spend time with each other. Part of the arrangement was they would not have children. Because
if you bring a kid into that, it's too weird.
Which,
right?
You know, they have their standards, right?
Sure.
So no kids, but and then they would date other people at the same time. So they'd often all four go to a bar and hang out, or they would play games. I mean, like, really, it was like double dating.
Yeah.
And the two that were, you know, my client was actually the boyfriend of the girl who was in the marriage.
Okay.
And, you know,
he's single. Okay. All right.
And had a really rough divorce and was sort of just happy to have sex with somebody basically. Right. And have low commitment. Like, that was actually helpful for him to have this sort of, I really care about her. She treats me really well. It's good to know I'm a human being again, but I don't have to run off and marry her because she's married and she's, you know, there's this flexible arrangement. Anyway, so, but what was interesting is that, you know, the two partners felt more connected to their girlfriend and boyfriend than they did with each other. And this is, you know, this is a glimpse in time. I don't know what that looks like in 20 years.
Sure. Or where they're at even now.
But I think what's helpful about if, you know, that's the choice you're going to make sure you know the laws of your state.
It's important. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's some bigamy stuff and polygamy, whatever it is, but
polygamy,
polygamy. But I think if everyone is very clear on what is happening, then you're sort of a little bit cocky.
Well, I mean, the way I see it is they're adults. They can make this decision.
Yeah, of course.
But it's like I always say, again, this goes back to what I do with the kids when there's hard decisions to be made and everyone's having an argument about it, is that, okay, but know the consequences.
Yeah.
And they're not always going to happen, but there are potential consequences, and those could be tremendously scarred feelings, the complete dissolvement of the marriage that was working previous. Right. I don't think any of this should come as a surprise.
No. And cost benefit analysis is what you're talking about. Like, what is the benefit to this?
Yeah.
And if the benefit is I could just have sex with whoever else I want and that keeps my marriage healthy and that's all it is, you know, for some people that will work.
Sure, of course.
But there are many others who believe that. And the reality is there are bonding mechanisms that come with sex that you cannot control.
They're also pretty rarely like 20. These people are usually like
they're your
35,
people.
35, 40. My people.
Your great generation of people.
Yeah, they are the middle-aged crisis
absolutely
types.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying that means that they don't have as many rights as anybody else, but I'm just saying, I mean, let's be honest here.
Be honest what it is.
Yeah, honest for what it is.
The second part of the question, what relationships benefit and do not benefit from this arrangement? And I would say no relationships benefit from this relationship if it matters that you're with one person or if it matters that you are not someone is picked over you. Because take that concept. I think that's one of the things about marriage that is can be really powerful and uniting and helpful is that commitment to each other.
Sure.
And knowing that even when things are rough, you're not going to go find someone else. And then someone might argue like, hey, we have this great relationship, but what keeps it great is we can step out and that works for us. Sure. If you think so and it works,
there are
awesome
going to be cases where
proof
it works, of course.
Right. But I would say on the whole, it's not really, doesn't work for a lot of people. It's pretty rare. But you could also argue that monogamy doesn't work for a lot of people either.
That seems to be the trend in some ways.
Right. So if this is going to be a 2%er, like this is not going to be a large group of people, maybe five.
Like
I don't
Kim
know
and I and you and Adam are probably more and more today, I'm trying not to generalize, but we're considered a little more fringy than we used to be in that very committed.
Yeah.
In for the long haul. Just had our 21-year anniversary.
Right.
I don't have any, there's nothing going, Scott, it's time to step out, get that sports car and go for it. Not having any of that.
It's because you have never grown up.
True. I need
I need
my mom character in my life. There's maybe something to that, but don't ever tell her I said that. But the point is that those kinds of relationships are what I need and you need and others need. And maybe there's a few people here, but percentage wise, what you're saying and what I think I'm agreeing with is that just be really careful.
Yeah.
Like it just seems like let me just put it this way. I've known some people who lived this lifestyle and were sure that they had it right. I had it wrong. They like to be real territorial about it.
Yeah.
And I checked back in with them lately. And of course they're not together. One of them's off married to somebody very committed with a couple of kids and has nothing to do with that lifestyle anymore. And the other one, I don't know what he's doing.
Right.
But the point is that it's easy to see it and be in the middle of it and think you found it. And that's great. Just like a monogamous marriage might be. Yeah. I mean, a year from now, Kim may suddenly grow horns and kill us all. I don't know. And then everyone will say, well, how'd your monogamous marriage go this time or whatever?
Well, she turned into a...
devil baby or whatever.
Devil baby.
But I I'm not saying blanket statement, hey, polyamory's for
everybody
or nobody. Right. Obviously it's for somebody, but I just think if we're giving raw, not data here, but practical information, it is right that these don't work out very often.
Right. Right. Because inevitably there's always a weakness or a chink in somebody's armor and you're going to find someone who doesn't have that same chink, but you won't see all the rest. That's why cheating and affairs exist they're rampant. So is that polyamorous without the information? Yeah. I mean, that's what cheating is I found someone else who fulfills me in a certain way.
Right.
And this is just, hey, we're all being honest about it. But the stats on affairs working out and becoming this committed, wonderful relationship, pretty low.
Yeah.
And, you know, the stats on people salvaging their marriage after a marriage or after an affair are okay, but they're not great.
Right.
Usually because they have lots of other things that have bound them together, right? So you're sort of trying, you're thinking you're cool when you're doing it. And I think that's maybe one of the Achilles heel here is that.
Well, it's cool changes, cool never lasts.
Yeah.
Cool,
and you're going to fall in love with this person.
Probably. You're going to have feelings for the other guy. And then, all that stuff can happen. But the main thing here is too, is just when you're in the thick of all of that, there's going to be a sense, no matter which way you land on this, that society's going to have its thing.
Yeah.
And you may go against that and think society's got it wrong 1,000 times to Sunday. It doesn't matter. It will still have an impact.
Right.
Still affect the way you or someone in that relationship is going to feel.
Right.
So you can't discount it completely. You don't live in a vacuum.
Yeah, because if you were an alien and your brain didn't work the way that everyone's brain works, which it does, which it bonds, it connects.
Sure.
You're not special. You're not a snowflake.
To get the theme.
But if you want to do it, whatever. But let me tell you this. So I'm probably outing like a million people right now. Are you ready?
Yeah, go.
So apparently there's a symbol for swingers.
A symbol?
They got a symbol. It's the pineapple.
What does that mean?
It's just a pineapple. You put a pineapple on your front porch, or you put a pineapple like on your in your wreath, or
what?
You wear jewelry with a pineapple.
For real?
Yeah, I've heard this. I could totally be wrong.
I want to wear one just to see what happens.
Yeah, you might get solicited. But anyway, it's particularly in a town in Utah that you would be familiar with. I'm not going to...
Go ahead. What?
Draper.
Oh, Draper. Of course. I could have guessed.
Yeah, of course. They're all swingers.
They
anyway,
have issues up there.
So they, this pineapple thing is so funny.
Except my sister and her husband. They're fine.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
And Ken's really offended that no one has offered.
Of course he is.
He's like, what do you got to get solicited around here? Well, anyway, pineapple. So this pineapple thing, my friend told me about it. She lives in Draper and it's a thing and everyone knows it, right? So I come home. We were on a girls' trip. I come home. There is a pineapple on my counter.
Are you kidding me?
And I'm like, Adam, what is this? And he's like, it's a pineapple.
We're going to have it for dinner.
Don't you know? It's a thing. So turns out it's a thing.
That's hilarious. So next time I'm in a pizza place and they say, what do I want? I'm going to say, I'd like to have pineapple on it. Anyone here interested in toppings? Fantastic. All right. Well, there you go. Thank you for who wrote that. I don't know who you were, but it was nice of you. That brings us to the end of episode one of The Therapy Show with Wendy and Scott. And I think it went well. I really am looking forward to the rest of this series. But again, we can't do it without your support. So big thanks to all of you. If you want to visit the web and see what's going on for the show, you can go to frogpants.com/therapy. It's real simple. Just head over there. Ways to contact us, hang out with others, meet each other and so on. All available for the taking. Wendy, anything else before we go?
No. I don't have to plug anything, do I?
You don't have anything to plug? You got like no, I don't know. I mean, this is going to, we're not sure when this actually hits the airwaves, so plugging anything is a dangerous prospect anyway.
I'll just plug some like, be nice to the guy at the grocery store.
Yeah, and no pineapples, whatever you do. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time for episode two of The Therapy Show.
Program so good, it's like you're there!